Hello friends, and welcome to Something Borrowed with me, Harry Baker, a performance-based podcast where me and a special guest from the world of poetry and beyond share something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue. This month's guest was the fantastic Georgie Jones, and it was a vibe. This is the least editing I've ever done on a podcast. It was just a fun time, start to finish. We do this live in Margate. I have a bit of an open mic beforehand if you wanted to come down in person. And this month in particular, the open mic was huge energy. I think a lot of it was maths based. That's why I got so excited. So I've dropped you in at the very start of the show. Sometimes I drop you in for my first poem, but I just wanted to give you a bit of a feel for the room and to thank everyone who was there, who was a part of that. So I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. We cover topics from slams to online versus real life performing to the gym changing rooms, to Margate, to friendship, to the entire universe. So I will be back with you at the end. In the meantime, have a lovely ear sesh with these poems.
Something Borrowed by Harry Baker. To all of my friends who are watching right now, thank you so much for being here. I'm in a good mood and you can't guarantee that these days.
Yes, we got a woo. Give it up for yourselves. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Something Borrowed. So happy to have you here. Just in the interval, Georgie said to me, is the open mic always that good? I feel quite intimidated. So thank you, all of you, for being brilliant. And also, what are you doing intimidating our guests? Dial it back a bit, please. Honestly, I love that so much. I love it every time, but today felt especially magic. So thank you, everyone, for doing it. Thank you, all of you, for being in the audience and adding to that. We could not do this without you. I've been so inspired by the open mic. I've decided to change my Something Old, partly to just justify my position as leader of the maths cult. Feeling a bit threatened, if I'm honest. I did a show up in Edinburgh called I Am 10,000. And it was based around the fact that on the 5th of August, 2019, I turned 10,000 days old, which I think is a birthday we don't celebrate enough. And my friend said, when I had a show called I Am 10,000, doesn't that just mean that you were 16 in binary? And that goes to show the kind of friends that I have. But I worked out that in Roman numerals, 10,000 is just, which is a lot more delicious. And so I decided to try and look at the maths and the poetry together. For ages, I told myself they were two separate parts of my life that I would just sort of enjoy at different points. And then I realized that they have things in common as well. And one thing I learned is that they do have in common is that a lot of people don't like either. But the best people do, and all of those people are in this room. And so one thing that I genuinely think they have in common is this idea of searching for patterns and connection, of trying to make sense of the world, of trying to link things together. And to do that, I think it requires a leap of playfulness. And I think that is something that people don't immediately associate with maths, but is such an inherent part of what it is to try and figure stuff out. You have to give yourself permission to try things. You may not get the answer that you expect, but that journey is still always a worthwhile one, I believe. And so this poem came from that sense of playfulness. I wanted to play around with alliteration, and rather than just picking one letter, I wanted to try and go through the whole alphabet and pick a different thing for each letter. And then while I started writing it, I realized at the same time, I could also try and map the history of the universe as we went, just to keep it light. And given that, I could have chosen anything in the entire universe. The thing that I went for the letter P was a pepperami. And that's because I was reading the ingredients on a pepperami, and the percentage of pork in it surprised me. Would anyone like to have a guess at what they think it might be? 3, 7, 110. We've got a big range here. So the correct answer on the one I had is 108%. For every 100 grams of finished pepperami, 108 grams of pork have gone into that pepperami. It has lost weight during the process. And as a mathematician, that's a very flawed way of measuring percentage. As a vegetarian, it is incredibly worrying. But as a poet, what a metaphor. Shows that we go beyond the limitations put upon us by society. They say that we should give 110%, and it sounds like pepperami have come the closest thus far. So because of that, they're in the poem. It's an A to Z of time and space, and it goes like this. First, there was nothing. I'm talking nothing but nothing. Then there was something. in amongst that nothing was something. And something somehow split into some things, and some things even managed to become things. So take Adam. Adam was added up out of atoms. Before that, it was black and barren. Then it became big and banging. Out of the chaos came countless crazy complex patterns. And then, dun, 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 dinosaurs happened. Through evolution, everything's edited every day. That's how we fine-tune, finesse, and then finally find our way. Just as the galaxies have gotten to gear, the game changed because hip, hip, hooray, Homo sapiens came. And we invent, imagine, inspire, and innovate. We've journeyed from jamming in caves to jamming, jamming in a cake. That knack for knowledge knitted and knotted away like silent caves, we learn the language of living, often a little late. We make music. We maneuver mathematical methods. We've noticed and noted the nodes of our own neural networks overflowing, outpouring, open mics to operatics. We are the pork presented, purported in pepperami packets. Because we question. From quick quizzes to quantum quarks. Revolutions of the heart to renaissances of art, you see. Scriptures and science seek signs of the sublime. Meanwhile, through trees, trickles the entirety of time. Our universe is unfinished but utterly underway. Its vibrancy vibrates via ventricles, valves, and veins. You see, we wonder and we wonder. We explore and we explain. We yearn for what is yonder. As we zoom out into space, we can forget that we were not the first to be here. By any stretch, we will not be the last to leave. And whilst we can't control our history or know our distant future, we can make the most of what might lie between. We can be kind. And we can accept the kindness of others. The world shows us what we allow ourselves the time to discover. We can listen, truly listen to another person's needs. Not just wait until they've stopped talking to take our turns, if we can be brave enough to try and make all kinds of mistakes. We can be playful, because what is a life without play? We can remind ourselves each day it's not too late for new beginnings, when a single moment can hold the whole universe within it. Because when we zoom out, we realize how small it becomes. So either none of this matters, or all of it does. From atoms, big bang, chaos, dinosaurs, evolution. The fine-tuning of the galaxies to humans. Imagine that journey of knowledge through language and museums overflow with the poetry of quantum revolution. As the sublime trickles through the universe's veins, we wonder, explore, yearn, and zoom out once again. Because when we zoom out, we realize how small it becomes. So either none of this matters, or all of it does. Thank you so much. You're an absolutely delightful audience. I'm so excited for this. Could you please take that warmth and energy and loveliness and double it and raise the roof as we welcome to the stage our guest for this month's Something Borrowed, the fantastic Georgie Jones.
Hiya. Do you know, I had every intention of playing it very cool, and then Harry dubbed me in it, and now you know I'm all intimidated by all your poetry, so good stuff. My Something Old is an old poem that I wrote a while ago, and it's about my favourite place in the world, which is the changing rooms at Virgin Active Cricklewood Branch. Anyway, it goes like this. I've got a confession. I've been looking at the women in the changing rooms in the gym, and I just want to be very clear about one thing. I was not using the gym. My flatmate sneaks me in to sit in the steam room and or sauna. She works on the front desk. No exercise for me. Anyway, this time I'm in the gym and I'm getting ready for a swim, and I'm hoping nobody looks at me. I'm wondering whether there's a way I can get my costume on without taking off my jeans. God forbid anybody sees what I've got hiding underneath. I am mid-manoeuvre and it's gone a bit wrong. My full coverage costume has turned into a thong. Down below, I've got two legs in the same hole, and up here, my old bracelet snagged on my new chunky knit. And then before I can snatch it, my costume starts to slip. So I fall forwards, elastic pings, knickers and bras fall to the floor with my jeans. And before I know it, I am totally naked. I'm sort of awkwardly sprawled on the women's changing rooms at Virgin Active Cricklewood, and nobody notices. Nobody gives a shit. nobody sees my naked body and is immediately sick. They're too busy towel drying freshly showered skin. They're distracted by nail varnish that's worn too thin, yanking tights over not quite dry thighs. I mean, there's one woman in the corner with her leg up on a chair, just full on hair drying her pubes. And I can't remember the last time I saw women like this. Post-work, post-workout women, out of breath, hair glued down to sweating heads, post-gym, post-swim women rolling bikini bottoms over cellulite and wobbling thighs. I can't remember the last time I saw women like this. Real women. And I don't mean like Dove campaign, real women. I mean actual real women, women with stretch marks from ankle to thigh, with curved bellies and tired eyes, women with leg hair and armpit hair. There are thousands of pubes and lopsided boobs, and there are lean thighs that don't touch and then thighs that do. There are six packs and sculpted backs and slender arms and rolls of fat. There is acne and backknee and wobbly bums and birthmarks and scars and post-school run mums wrangling hordes of goggle-eyed children towards the pool. And of course, I am shocked. Not because of anything these women have or have not got, but because I can't believe I have never seen this before. I have never seen this much normal. Instead, I've been fed these like bright-eyed, white-toothed women who pose scantily clad, parenthetical limb, framing slender finger on slender waist, insurmountably symmetrical. They are photoshopped and filtered within an inch of their lives, so much so you couldn't pick the original woman out of a lineup. This, comparatively, feels like a glorious magic lair. And on my way home, I want to scream in the face of every woman I pass that we should all just stop caring. I really want to bottle this, and I want to give a bottle to every woman I know and tell her to have a little bit if she's feeling crap, or failing that, get herself down to Virgin Active Cricklewood. That is where the real women are. They are fierce and enchanting, wriggling out of sports bras while sweat ferries mascara into their dark circles. It feels like a real moment. One I will inevitably forget the next time I see a gorgeous stranger in a bikini and I think, I want to look like that. But for now, whilst it's here and whilst I've got it, I feel like celebrating. Thank you.
Thank you for being
thank
here.
Thank you for having
thank
me.
Thank you for sharing your poems. I'm very excited. This is the first Something Borrowed I've done where I've not met the guest before. So,
stranger danger.
Stranger danger, indeed. And you know that last poem shows that nothing to worry about? Absolutely
yeah,
fine?
Well, we'll see how we go. Could be all downhill from here.
I came across your work because someone sent me a video. I think it was either on TikTok or Instagram. Mm. And the videos I get sent are of a couple of genres. And this week epitomizes that. Someone sent me a video of someone cutting up a pizza to explain infinity and how it relates to the circumference of a circle. And the other video someone sent me was someone listening to a German hip-hop song about a woman called Barbara making some rhubarb pie. Mm. So people know me. They know what I like. And someone sent me one of your videos and I was immediately hooked and loved it. So it is so happy to have you here in person. I wanted to ask you, how did you get into writing and performing? And then does it feel different having stuff online with lots of people seeing it versus being in a lovely cafe with 40 people who are all very attractive and wonderful and lovely?
Yeah, definitely. I started writing poetry because I didn't want to write a dissertation at uni. And the options were like write a dissertation or do like a performance project. And I didn't know how to make a performance bit like interesting. So I was like, probably just make it rhyme, I guess. I don't know. So I did that and it was all a bit, I won't go into it. It's a bit, well, but it's basically, it was about the performance of spectacle. So I read a poem with nothing, just in kind of a plain t-shirt and maybe jeans, not maybe jeans, maybe jeans, maybe trousers. There was definitely a bottom half to the costume. And then asked members of the audience to do the lights and the music, and like, did that make it more of a spectacle, or did it make it more of a performance with that stuff or without? And I think what I've learned from doing poetry since then is that it doesn't. It's a lot of it's about this, and a lot of it's about this, and like the connection that you hopefully make with people. I don't know about you, I feel like that's so much of what poetry is just kind of finding a way to connect with people, and you don't need lights or costume or the rest of it. Yeah. Does that answer that question?
Yeah.
Okay, great. 100%. Then that's my answer.
I started this as a podcast because I missed that connection. And it was during lockdown and was doing online gigs and was just throwing stuff out and getting nothing back. Like sometimes people in the chat doing a clap emoji. but not enough. whereas doing this, I did it on Instagram Live. So it was just sort of my face and the other person's face. And even having one other person to perform to or to talk to or to hear back from, like, was enough in that moment. And I realized how essential it is to, for me with poetry, to be able to share it with someone, to be able to have it heard. And actually a lot of the stuff I wrote during that time, I didn't know how it felt until it was back being able to share it in person. Because for me, that's when you can tell if the poem does land or not, I guess.
Totally.
I am much newer to TikTok. And what I love about it is that it's a chance to sort of reset having no friends anymore.
So I
follow three people. Nice. One of them is you.
Oh my gosh.
One of them is my friend Gecko, lovely singer-songwriter. And one of them is Grace's cousin who does window tinting. And it is a glorious combo.
Yeah.
And it's just, the internet feels a lot more wholesome when there's fewer people involved. But before I do something new, I wanted to ask you, because you did a poem a day for December.
And regretted it.
Yeah. Well, my question is going to be, how soon did you regret it? But also...
Pretty soon.
Yeah.
Pretty soon. I said, I was saying, my mum's here. And I was saying to mum, like, oh yeah. Yay. And I remember being like, I'm just going to get it all done by November. And then every day in December will be fine. Have I ever done anything on time in my whole life? No. So obviously then I did maybe had a week of stuff in December. And then every day was a panic. I was more tired than I've ever been. Had more like stress acne than I've ever had in my life. Mum was like, you don't look good. I was like, yeah, I don't feel it. And I just was like, why? Why? It was nice, I suppose, as well. Like, I don't force myself to write like that. Yeah. So that was quite a nice challenge. And do you know what's ridiculous? I'm thinking of doing it again in March for National Poetry Writing Month. That's March, right?
I think it's April.
Okay, perfect. Which okay, is... great. So I can get it all written by March and then I'll put it out in April.
Yeah. And April's and one day shorter.
Perfect.
So...
Okay, let's definitely do it. But yeah. Have
Maybe
you
do it
done
in February
that?
And then it'll be even shorter. I've done... Poem the day. April, like, National Poetry Writing Month.
How
and
does it? Is
I
it
would
good?
Say by day four, it's haikus.
Okay, good.
It's absolutely all the best. And again, it starts with, like, I've got a couple in the bag. Like, I'll bring them out when I need to.
Yeah.
And that need is very, very soon.
Yeah.
But I do love it. And I love that discipline and trying to do it. And I think also it made me realise that my poems are very long. And so another sort of shorthand I did was to just write one poem and then share like little bits of it as if it was a series of
I
mini poems.
I should have done that. Yeah.
So if you get desperate, that's my top tip.
I definitely will get desperate. Thank you.
Amazing. Are you up for me doing something new?
Absolutely.
Great.
I am. Yeah.
So very excited because I've got a poem about Margate. And this came about because someone was visiting Margate and they wanted to sort of interview, I guess, local celebs for some of their insider tips for what they love about the town. And I was not on their list, but they told people they were doing it. And someone who follows me and follows them said, oh, you should get in touch with Harry. So sort of first reserve, got called up, and kind of exchanged like voice notes with this guy. And he said, like, it's 90 seconds long, and just talk about a couple of places that you like. And then sort of throw a comment, he said, or if you want, you could do it as a poem. And this was a couple of weeks ago, and I'm in the process of trying to like finish writing my latest book. So I've got no time to be writing new poems. And then, of course, when you dedicate a month to trying to write poems, they don't come. And when you have no time for poems, they refuse to go away. And so that night, I was attacked by a poem, and it came out. And then I wrote this sort of 90-second version. And then I was sort of mortified that I couldn't include all of my favorite places in Margate, and that's a really lovely problem to have, but it means I've written a sort of slightly longer version just to hope that I'm not going to get barred by anyone for not mentioning them. And met George's mum beforehand, who said, oh, I read somewhere that you're the poet laureate of Margate, and I was like, oh wow, people are talking about me. And then it turns out you read it like on my own bio, so I think I at some point I was feeling bold and made a claim that is not true and cannot be backed up. But if we start spreading that rumour, maybe someone else will take it on. So this is simply a poem for Margaret. It is seeing the sea the second you step out of the station. It is smelling the seaweed as soon as you get within 50 feet of the Turner. It is queuing up for the special from Pete's. It is dough balls from GB Pizza. It is po' boy being open for 2 hours at a time once every leap year if the moon is full. Then it is worth it. It is T.S. Eliot being an anagram of toilets. It is Tracy Emin having a seal named after her. It is playing crazy golf behind someone who has brought their own clubs. It is the council clearing away a Banksy but not your actual rubbish. It is a drag queen called Janet District Council. It is a surprising number of people being into crystals. It is Dreamland. It is a bed shop next to Dreamland, also called Dreamland. It is going into Scott's for a screwdriver and coming out with a table. It is stopping for coffee in Forts and Big Shop and Curve and Cliffs. It is the upstairs table in Xylo. It is the secret room in Little Swift. It is two post offices, one and a half of which are about to close. It is Daisy's deep fried baby bells and frozen Kinder Buenos. It is the best tracky bottoms I have ever owned. It is Shell Grotto. It is Christmas markets. It is marches for Palestine. It is people. It is people them. It is the Everyday Racism Book Club. It is community beach cleans. It is the Rise Up Cleanup murals. It is Heckle Sauna. It is a New Year's Day swim in the tidal pool. It is a birthday trip to the Crab Museum. It is pretty much a whole day out in International Food Centre. Yeah. It is Margate Pride being the best day of the year. It is jumping off the harbour arm. It is fireworks on the beach. It is outdoor cinema at the bandstand. It is how I've not mentioned the sunsets yet. It is the Tom Thumb Theatre. It is the bus cafe. It is the loop. It is that running club. It is that moment at the camp quiz. It is where else. It is we are here. It is brilliantly queer. It is where I plan to be for many years. A related question is, when are you moving to Margate?
Right now.
Great news. Where is home for you?
Oh, home is currently South London, but it's weird. I've lived in London for, I don't know, 11 years maybe now. I moved for uni and stayed, and it doesn't feel like home. Okay. I don't know. I don't know if anyone else lives in London. It's a weird thing. I would not call myself a Londoner, but people say, like, once you've been there for 10 years, you are. But I'm like, you knew, thank you. I don't know. I just don't feel, yeah. Home is where the heart is, I suppose.
When I was 18, me and my friends had a rap group. Mm-hmm. And we once wrote a song called Home Is Where the Homies Are.
There you go.
And it all 31 of our Facebook followers were pretty into it.
That's it.
It's not quite put on as a phrase, but I think that that is part of it. I remember when we moved here, having like a similar energy to when I sort of started uni, where I met one person who was friendly and I was like, oh my God, please be my friend forever. And a lot of those people were just working in hospitality. So it was their job to be friendly. And like, you can't just sort of wait for their shift to end and sort of follow them home. But then, I don't know what it is and I don't know when it is, but it does feel like home. And that's a really lovely thing.
That is a lovely thing.
Probably took me 3 years. So if you start now, then by 2027,
wonderful.
All of this is yours.
Finally. Great. I'm ready. I'm ready for the challenge.
Are you up for sharing something new?
Yes, I would love to. I didn't know whether to move away, but for you to have some space to do your poem.
No,
sort of stayed like a little gargoyle on the stool.
I'm going to do the same.
Brill. I wrote this really recently and it's never heard anyone. It's never been heard by anyone. What? Ooh, yeah. It's about... I was chatting to someone about, like, you know, when you go through a breakup and it's, you're really like allowed to feel those feelings. And sometimes you kind of accidentally break up with your friend in a way that I don't really know why it happens or how it happens, but it's like very sad and you kind of need to like grieve it a bit. And it, anyway, it's about that. It's called Reason, Season, Lifetime. I hate titles so much. It's called Reason, Season, Lifetime. Anyway, it goes like this. They say, whoever they are, that people come into your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. You were all of the above. In spring, we were truly in season. Sap wet, ripe apricots, our syrupy fingers too relaxed to catch the dribble off our grins. In summer, we threw our heads back. When the earth was forgiving, we would tiptoe through bad decisions. Sun-kissed forearms draped around waists, compounded, we traipsed to village pubs where the landlady knew us by name. She poured our usual while we settled into seats that had remembered our shapes. September swapped the last breaths of summer for creme caramels. We turned on the standing lamp, folded our limbs into each other like origami cranes. You steeped leaves and we watched our futures dawn in the steam, become something worth believing in. Without warning, opaqued by frost, our warped windows lost their charm. I dislocated coats from the back of the wardrobe, you shopped for blue things and new things, and I ached for the limbs that had been knotted around me like a seatbelt. So much of me is you, actually. The orange nails and Rhiannon, and the milk first, you little weirdo. Anyway, I've stacked the apricots and the steam and the rest of it in a satin drawstring in case you want them for your something borrowed. Although it was always me who was borrowing.
Thank you.
That tied in all right, didn't it?
Something borrowed. That was huge. Set the bar for future guests. Yeah. Thank you so much. First time sharing it?
First time sharing it.
How'd you feel?
Nerves. It's nerves, isn't it? I think it's interesting what you were saying earlier about putting poetry on social media and what that feels like. And I feel like you never really know what a poem is until you do it live.
Yeah.
It's like a different thing, isn't it? You kind of measure stuff in... not healthily, I don't think, in like likes or views or the numbers of something. And that doesn't mean anything. It's helpful for an application, maybe.
Yeah.
But like beyond that, it doesn't really mean anything. I think it's how it lives in a space, like when you're kind of breathing life into it. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel. Also, I'm terrible in the moment. You know, when you're like having an argument or something and you want to think of something good to say. And then the next day you're like... okay, let's bring that up again. I've had some thoughts, but like I'm just not good at stuff. So tomorrow I'll know how I feel about that poem.
Wow. Tomorrow, you can send me a voice note tomorrow.
I will do,
I'll edit it into the podcast.
Yeah,
it'll be so slick.
Yeah,
play
perfect.
This as a laughter track. It'll be great. When I started performing, I did a lot of poetry slams. Mm. And so it was, you've got 3 minutes to share this thing and then random people in the audience give you a score out of 10. And obviously I loved it because numbers were involved. But the first few poems I wrote just fit that format quite well.
Yeah.
And so they would do well in these slams. And so I would start writing with that in mind. And I remember the first time I did a poem that was just a bit more gentle and personal. And like at the time, it was, felt like one of the most vulnerable things I'd written. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, I can't wait to share this with people. And did it at a slam, and it just didn't get a very high score. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, oh, it's such a shame. I thought that poem was good, but it turns out it's not. And that is just not how it works.
Yeah.
And I think, as you say, whatever format it is that you put it in, I think there is people who submit poems to magazines, and if they get rejected, that value is then ascribed to the poem.
Yeah,
and I think when you put stuff online, whether people respond to it or not, it's tempting to be like, oh, okay, that means it's good or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I've got better at not needing every poem to do everything,
mm-hmm.
or to kind of eclipse everything else I've ever done. And sometimes a poem just needs to capture something.
Yeah.
And if you share it and one person gets it, like, that is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to hold on to that in amongst everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the reasons why I love doing this in this kind of environment is that actually there are people in the room and you can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's intangible. And I've got poems that I just got so stuck in my head while I was writing that I sort of wrote it, unwrote it, rewrote mm. it. And then the second that I said it out loud, I was like, oh no, this one doesn't.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This doesn't work. And, yeah. and other ones where it feels magic and you know that it's got life and it's going to do
mm-hmm.
that. So I think, yeah, I can't imagine writing something and not having that process of sharing it or, mm. or feeling like it works or not.
Mm.
So yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I did a show, like a long, it's like an hour long spoken word show. I'm like very outrageously thinking about it now. I didn't test any of the stuff as like individual poems. I was like, okay, I'm here with my hour. Who's doing the lights? Like, it was just, and then after, like, yeah, I did that show for years. And then now it exists as something completely different,
yeah.
because you just tweak. And I think like, wow, that could have been, but whatever, it's part of the learning, I don't mind.
Yeah.
But you just think back to the first thing and you're like, if I had just tested
yeah.
some of it, even yeah. like it is amazing. Yeah.
And I think the other end of the spectrum is I've got friends who are comedians who don't even write it beforehand. They have their vague thoughts, they work, and it's all
yeah.
done through previews and that sort
yeah.
of process. And that end of the spectrum terrifies me mm-hmm. as well. And I think there is somewhere in the middle that is sort of that happy place.
I agree. Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. Is it right if I do?
I would love it.
Borrowed?
Yeah.
I have got two borrowed poems, but they are both very short. They're two of my favourite poems of all time. For Valentine's Day, Grace got me these two books, and one is Lem Sisse and one is Wendy Cope, and they're both poets that I love. And Lem Sisse does write a poem every day, but he limits it to being four lines long. So again, mm-hmm. I don't know if that was part of it when he started, but he soon learned one of the tricks. and this is, and again, I don't know, there's hundreds of these, and he's put his favourites in a book, and he is one of my favourite poets. He's an amazing performer, writer, individual. And I would love to know at what point during this daily process of writing poems, he wrote this one. Because I think, like, if I'd written this one, I would stop. I'd just be like, I've cracked it. I'm not reaching these lofty heights again. So if this was day one, then fair play to him, but it was probably not. And I think it is as perfect as a poem can be. How do you do it? Said Night. How do you wake and shine? I keep it simple, said Light. One day at a time. So good. And this is by Wendy Cope. She's got a poem called The Orange that Helen Seymour read at a previous one. And this is one of my favourite other poems of hers. It's called He Tells Her. He tells her that the earth is flat. He knows the facts, and that is that. In altercations fierce and long, she tries her best to prove him wrong. But he has learned to argue well. He calls her arguments unsound and often asks her not to yell. She cannot win. He stands his ground. The planet goes on being round. When I discovered that second poem, I loved it so much. I like took a picture of it and just put it up online. I was like, this is amazing. And the first comment I got was from a guy saying, yeah, but the world is flat though. And that's just the perfect response. So just missed the point entirely. Amazing. Yep, doing something borrowed.
Definitely, yeah. My Something Borrowed is by a poet called Polar Bear. And thank you. Do you know, once I did slams twice, poetry slams, and then I was like, not for me. And once I was trying to adjust the mic, and I have like, okay, we'll just overshare. I've got really sweaty hands like all the time. And as I was trying to twist the thing, and I was like, oh, I can't do it. My palms are sweaty. And then I went, knees weak, arms are heavy. And people like looked at me like, blink, blink, blink. I was like, okay, never mind. Talk amongst yourselves. That was the reason I stopped doing slam poetry. That response. No. There's Something Borrowed is by Polar Bear. And I just think he's amazing. I saw him do this on YouTube. It's called Jessica. Or it's called... Yeah, it was... I think it was called Dumplin. But now, anyway, it's written down as Jessica. So irrelevant. Stop tugging. And basically, I'm going to try, when I read it now, to like not do an impression of him doing his poem. But I think, like, studied a lot of poetry at school, and I was like, I just don't get it. I can't unpack the metaphor, and it's too heavy, and that just makes me feel like it's not for me. It's not accessible. And then I saw him doing this, and I was like, okay, I like this. And I guess maybe that's the difference between spoken word and, like, written word. I don't know. Anyway, it just made me be like, I want a slice of that thing. So anyway, it's called Jessica, and it goes like this. 15, and I'm sparking a joint in the park with the boys, chatting fart, making noise. The girls are on a bench over there in the distance. To put space between our best means of resistance, it's getting dark and we all want to kiss them, but we don't have a clue what to do, so we just diss them. Too embarrassed to talk it over. Then John's like, hold on, somebody's walking over. Oh no, yo, it's two of the girls. The other half of the species, confusing our world. If they choose you, it proves you're mature to the world. Fingers crossed in my pocket, foot's moving the dirt. Never sure whether they're going to smile or bite you. They walk right over like they're ready to fight you. They both look at me and say, Jessica likes you. My mind goes numb, my mouth's like, all right, cool. Let me tell you about Jessica Brown. Every single maths lesson I've been checking her out. Something in her eyes makes my chest want to shout, and that freckle by the neck of her blouse, I'm like, wow. Turns out she'd been checking me too. And though I'd never asked her out, she'd been expecting me to. So just for good measure, extra pressure to boot, now my penalty's up, am I ready to shoot? At this point, I know I'm supposed to follow him. And if anyone's got kissing techniques, I want to borrow them. I can't swallow, and the possible horror of tomorrow, if I get it wrong, it's got me hollow, I can't breathe. It'll be worse if I run, so I can't leave. And I've got no control over the bones in my knees, my friends are egging me on, telling me you can't leg it, if you leave now you'll regret it, believe. Next thing I know, we're in the middle of the park. Her friends, my friends, watch from afar, neither of us even sure where to start, the stars are coming out, the whole park's getting dark. She looks at me. My mind goes numb. I try to fight the urge to just pull her hair and run. Next thing I know, her tongue's touching my tongue, and I'm not sure if I'm doing it right, but I'm like, nice one. For some reason, I'm closing my eyes. The whole park melts, and we're frozen in time. Her hand's on my shoulder. I'm holding her side. Then my hand goes down, slowly strokes her behind. I don't know why. What a joker am I? Oh no, says my mind. Something's poking her thigh. It's not how it's supposed to unfold, I won't lie, but she's holding me tight just to show me it's fine. This girl is wicked, and I wish we could kiss forever. I hear my name and I try not to listen. Open my eyes, I'm in the fetal position, on my bed, age 10, not even dreaming of kissing. Like a mission, but I smell fried dumpling from down in the kitchen. No television in my room, like I'm wishing. But there's football to play, to the park's my decision. Mum shouts up, I hope you've got your vest on. And even though I know that I don't, I'm like, yes, Mum. I know now it's never better to test, Mum. Forget TV detectives, best believe she's the best one. Can't stop mum, kickoff's at 2. Boy, come back after 7, you'll catch a lick off my shoe. I smile as I leave. Rally burn up the street, 2 dumpling I'm eating too quickly to chew. Welcome back to this 40-a-side week-long grudge match. The score is 34-all. Steve gets the ball out on the right, cuts back inside, square ball to John. John goes to turn, the crowd shouts, man on, pass back to Steve, who lets loose a shot you wouldn't believe. Top right-hand corner out of goalkeeper's reach. The team goes mad, pile on, behind the goal. Man, what's the time? 20-9. I'm like, oh. Racking my brain for an excuse. Even though it's no use, I still choose to make one. Mum will take none, but I've got to say something. Close the front door, can still smell the dumpling. I can't see my mum, so I dump my stuff. Just enough time to make a tea and butter her up. What time do you call this? I don't reply, just act surprised and close my eyes to get licked, but the licks don't come. I stand struck dumb, count down from 5 to 1, then I slowly open my eyes. To my surprise, I stand dressed smart, I'm now 21. Well done, son. Mum gives me a hug. Young man grown up, graduated and done. She wears her best clothes and I don't suppose she knows her son owes the man 10 grand for fun. But right now it don't matter. As she sat chatting with Jess's mum and dad over a cold platter, they're all laughing how we're still together. From the side we watch them drink wine, get leathered. She looks amazing, better than I ever remember. In those lessons when she drove me crazy, she looks at me, a little nod for maybe it's time we should tell him we're having a baby. I open my eyes. I'm 29 and our 8-year-old son wants to learn how to rhyme. Standing at the foot of our bed and off the top of his head, he spits a flow showing perfect time. You know that deserves a smile. Okay, let's get dressed. Brush your teeth and we'll work on style. Get your clothes on and don't forget your vest, lad. And even though I know that he won't, he's like, yes, dad. A cup of tea in my mug that says best dad. More rhymers in the house, that'll be driving Jess mad, but she just smiles as she sips her tea and I tickle her feet. He comes back with his best pad, right. First thing, you must observe the time. A good flow is like a fossil, it preserves the time. And the only thing of worth you can learn from mine is that the spaces between words deserve to shine. You gotta find your own style, son. And if the flow feels right to you, the rhyme's done. Sometimes looking back in time is good. Because things don't change as you find what you love. Speak what you know, breathe deep as you flow. Some people are going to bite you to keep the light down and they can say what they like. But when you're gripping a mic, just make sure that you rhyme for right now. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That might be my favourite thing that's ever happened on this. I had a similar experience. It was one of the first poems I saw. And I, as you were performing, I could feel myself sort of mouthing along. And I've not heard it for years. Yeah. But it's also, I love hearing it in his sort of thick Brummy accent and could feel you resisting the urge to also do that. And I thought you did it brilliantly. So thank you so much for that. I was in Poetry Collective at the Roundhouse. And you were as well?
I was as well.
I saw them perform. I was in the second year that ever did it. And I saw them performing at a festival. Mm-hmm. And so the first year that did it were poets like Dean Atta, Sean Mahoney, Talia Randall, Deanna Roger, and like many, many others. And I saw them all and I thought, wow, this is amazing. And I was had just finished school, was doing a gap year before uni. And I was like, I'm going to try and sort of sign up for this. And it must be a pretty high bar. I'm not sure if I'm going to be allowed in. And at the time they were just like, oh yeah, cool, you can do it. And there was no, like there weren't many people who wanted to spend 3 hours on a Sunday writing poems. But I was amazed. And then I realized that the reason why it seemed like every single poet that was on this course was just incredible was because it was run by Polar Bear.
And
by the end of our year, what was great was because the first year was so good, the Roundhouse Collective then got booked for loads of different festivals, and then we all turned up as the sort of B team and had a great time of it. But I also remember that a lot of us started to sound like mini polar bears. And I think that's such a thing when you're starting out, when you see someone perform, you do want to kind of emulate that. And it was sort of a bit of Polar Bear, a bit of Kay Tempest, a bit of Scroobius Pitt, were all of these things that I was just hearing and had never experienced before, and then was trying to sort of find my voice in amongst it. When did you do Roundhouse Collective?
I'm not even going to pretend I couldn't remember. I don't know. Years later, because I came, that's quite, did you know then that you wanted to do poetry? If you did it straight from school, did you?
I didn't know that I knew. At the time, I had applied to do medicine at uni.
Whoa.
And had just started to go to these open mics and thought, if I become a doctor, I won't have time to do this. So let's get it all out of my system. And then the more that I did it, the more that I realized that in sharing these things that I'd written, I felt like I could put my whole self into it.
Mm.
And I was applying for medical school alongside 20 other people who would have been better doctors than I would have been. But I just thought it was a good thing to do. And there was no way of knowing how I would have done it until I got there.
Yeah.
And so there was a real tangible moment of trying to compare the two sort of career paths of like doctor versus poet. And I was like, well, words can save lives too. But the feeling that I had was that if I don't make these things, they won't exist. And it was that real sense of, I feel like I'm becoming my full self when I'm doing this. And so Roundhouse Collective was a huge part of that. And I was already sort of going to open mics, and I had two poems at the time, and I would just sort of alternate which one I did until people got sick of me. And so then it was, yeah, in doing that, it then meant went to uni, switched courses to do maths because I thought, one day I'm going to lead a cult. No, I think I was worried if I studied English, they would tell me I was doing it wrong.
Right.
And at that point, I was already writing and performing and loving it. And I knew that I wanted to keep loving it.
Mm.
And so did maths. But then that meant I had sort of 3-4 years in Bristol, which is such an amazing city to be in, where I was just performing here, there and everywhere. And so then when I finished with my maths degree, I thought, I'm going to give the poetry thing a go. And I was so grateful to have had 3-4 years of being a student and that being who I was, and the poems were just a fun thing on the side, and then it slowly sort of took over more and more. But how did you come across the Roundhouse Collective?
I did a slam at the Roundhouse. It was exactly what you said. People were talking about issues, important issues, and I was talking about feelings. It's just not the place for it, I don't think, which is fine. There are other places for it, and the issues need a platform as well. I've also realised later on, just don't love competitive arts. Not for me. Not for me. So, yes, I had done that and shared my feelings. And then a wonderful woman who used to work at the Roundhouse, Linda Bloomfield, said to me, why don't you apply for this thing? And I was like, okay. And it was not, you can just do it. It was application station. But at that point, so I'm trying to think, maybe it was 2017, 2018, later on, maths, not so much with the maths for me, but and I did that and loved it, loved the discipline of it, the poetry writing on a Sunday. It was good. But again, I think the reason I love Polar Bear stuff, he wasn't teaching the course by that point, but it was just very like, that's enough, that still makes something a poem if it's just very lyrical and rhythmic. It doesn't have to be full of like devices, you know. And I was whoa, that exactly what you said. I feel like I've been doing it wrong, but actually it counts. It just all counts and is all fine. So, liked it. Liked it. Kept doing it.
We're very grateful that
yeah,
you did.
Yeah, thanks. Me too.
For me doing something.
Yes, I am.
Cool. Is everyone all right?
Yeah.
This is where I just have a lovely time and forget there's other people here, but I do want to check in. So this is my Something Blue. It was going to be my Something Old, but then I thought I needed to get some maths in. So it got bumped along. But it is something I've been thinking about a lot. As I said, I've been putting a new book of poems together, I think, as we've sort of said, when I write stuff, it's with an aim to share it out loud with people. So thinking about what ones you want to put on paper and how you want them to be, I used to find terrifying, but I now find really exciting. And I remembered this poem, and it felt really important to go in there. And it was something that I was asked to write for World Refugee Day. And what the charity behind it were doing, where they were compiling an alternative dictionary of definitions for what a refugee is, because of what you see in the news and the completely dehumanizing nature of it. And so I started to make a list of things of what that word means for me, based on some dear, dear friends of ours. And it's blue, because the current rhetoric around it makes me so, so sad and pretty angry too. A refugee is the 9-year-old insisting we read his favourite stories together. Picked up English so quickly, he is his dad's go-to translator. The 11-year-old who has started to learn the violin. He is the strongest child I know, and yet, of course, somehow this works. The 3-year-old, same as my niece, whose eyes burn just as brightly. The mum who gives praise to Allah, they didn't have another boy. The dad who always asks me how the poetry is going. Tells me in Arabic the word for poet sounds like the word for hair. I tell myself that is because you cannot stop us growing. It is making sure when we go round we always have an empty stomach. Knowing we won't get away with saying no to food and coffee and more food and the best baklava you've ever tasted, and nor would we dream of turning it down. First time Grace said we were veggie, it meant we got given chicken instead of lamb. Not complaining because it tasted incredible. It is the one time we fried and ate conkers because they look like chestnuts they have back in Syria. One bite was enough to know that they are not the same. They taste like conkers. We look it up on the NHS that night and find out they could be poisonous. Call up in a panic and say, we're so sorry, we might have killed your children. Being laughed at down the phone and told not to worry, they seem fine. They've been through worse. It's agreeing not to tell them about the time we tried to make falafel at home. It's cleaning the house twice before they come to visit, knowing they will still find ways of tidying up once they arrive. It's Grace checking they would be okay with me writing this poem. Them saying, of course we trust his judgment. After all, he chose you as his wife. It is flawless logic. It is Friday prayers. It is Arsenal games. It is let me fix your toaster. It is a milk frother made from a broken electric toothbrush. It is passing your driving test. It's passing your driving theory. It is failing your driving test. It is next time. It is FaceTime. It is playtime. It is helping with the maths homework. It is when can we visit you at the beach. It is we are coming to London this weekend. It is friendship. It is family. It is our favourite wedding photo. It is just a snapshot. It is just the beginning. It is just completely gorgeous. Thank you. Thank you so much. This is the part where I breathe a big sigh of relief because I've got no more poems to do. So I can just sit back and enjoy it. But I wanted to say thank you so much for coming and for sharing.
Thanks
and
for having
being
me.
So generous with it. Are you up for doing something blue?
I am, yeah. My something blue, I was thinking about sad things and then I thought, I don't really want to end on a sad thing. So I've got a poem about the ocean. And I was sort of thinking about what I might read this evening. And I said to my boyfriend, do you think it's a bit basic to do something about the ocean? And he was like, the ocean? Nothing basic about that? Beach? So this one's called There's Nothing Basic About That Beach. It's not amazingly lighthearted, I will say that, having said I don't want to like linger in the sadness. Anyway, it goes like this. In this and every other lifetime, I have been cleansed by the water. When the needles in my soul require remagnetizing, I walk myself to the very edge. Suddenly, it all dissolves into nothingness. Mrs. Fuller used to reprimand the use of suddenly. It is a poor unit of language, she would say. I made her sound quite Victorian there. It was only 2004. Suddenly is apt. It is sudden. Without hesitation, swiftly, like candy floss on my tongue, every heft my heart has ever held is surrendered to the water. From here, as the tide laps my ankles and the salt makes hammocks of the hairs my razor couldn't reach, none of it matters. Not the mornings I turn my eyes square instead of getting up and outside. Not the three packs of Thai sweet chili sensations and half a jar of pickles I dared to call dinner. Not all the time I wasted spending how paper, speculating how paper might possibly beat rock. No. It's all gone. Suddenly, and it is suddenly, it's just me and these medicinal waters. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Incredible. Not enough poems have Thai sweet chili sensations in.
I agree wholeheartedly, yeah.
Fully into it. I once wrote a poem about dinosaurs, and for sort of every Christmas for the following 5 years, I got given dinosaur-based gifts, and I should have just written a poem about Thai sweet chili sensations.
Yeah.
You've got to put out what you want to get back. Thank you so, so much. That is it.
That is it. A massive thank you to Georgie Jones for being warm and wonderful and brilliant. And you felt it. I'm sure you did. What a time we've all just had. So thank you for being a part of that. If you want to follow Georgie online, you absolutely can do. If you want to see her in person, I recommend it. I am about to go on tour. I would love to see some of you there. Hopefully I'm coming near you. Dates and details are on my website. And otherwise, we will be back next month with more of the same. I love doing this. I get a lot from it and I put a lot in it. And what a way to live. So, be back with more of the same. Lots of love. Bye.
Something borrowed by Harry Baker to all of my friends who are watching.